All right, episode 4, no notes, the show with no research, just people talking. Jared Bailey with you. My guest today, the fantastic voice of Impact Wrestling in the Patriot Podcast, he is Tom Hannafan. It's good to see you again, man. We did something together, I don't know, when was that, like November, December-ish, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. I was... In retrospect, a little bit before things changed for me in wrestling. So
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting. It's nice to catch up, I guess, on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's good to see you again. Your hair's different. It looks good.
Yeah. Thanks. You know, it's just, you know, it's just, I got to keep the fade going because like the grays are coming in on the side. So it's the only thing that can really mask it. So it's the best I can do at 33.
I know I look like somebody who cuts their own hair because I am.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything. I don't know if Joe Dirt is your hairdresser or something like that, but you know, it's unique and you do you, man. You do.
Yeah, no, the goal. So it was,
yeah, what was it? The goal.
The goal. I'll let you know what the goal is. So it was 2021, the day before I flew down for the Senior Bowl. I was like, you know what? I think I was also going through like a midlife crisis at that point because I had just gone through like a breakup. And I just wanted to do everything that I wanted to do. So I was like, you know what? I'm perming my hair. And so I did that. And now I think the goal is to like almost get like a Patrick Mahomes thing going where like it's the thing all the way down. Yeah. And then
so what is the name of that Mahomes haircut?
I don't know.
This is very popular, obviously. It's probably just Mahomes because he made it popular, I think. But there had to be somebody before him. I don't know.
I mean, Odell kind of had something similar. His kind of came to like a V. That's what I do with mine. It's like it goes to like a V in the back. Something in that family of hairstyles, but I gotta keep it fresh. That is, I feel like that's what my generation
you gotta keep up with
on.
The time. Wait, how old are you?
23.
Oh, get out of here. Yeah.
What was that about?
As you're 10 years younger than me. Good for you.
Hey, no, you don't look a day over 25, Tom.
That's good. We'll keep it that way.
Yeah. I don't even know where I want to start with you. I mean, I've got your alma mater hanging behind me, by the way.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's something very near and dear to my heart, and my family is very, very much entrenched in all things Penn State. My mom went there. My brother was there 2 years ahead of me. So it's funny because, like, I think naturally, I think there's a point where people will hear you be proud of your college or something like that. And you can take it one of two ways. It's like, oh, that's really cool or something like that. Or it's like affiliated with your sports team or something like that. And some people, I think, maybe get turned off by it. And they think it's kind of an elitist sort of thing or whatever. Sure. And I'm like, no, this is something literally since I was a little kid. My mom was playing the Blue Band tape. Like those like tapes back in the day for all you crazy kids. Tapes that you'd put into like boom box or something like that. And she would play the Blue Band stuff throughout the house. I'm like, as a little kid, it was the coolest thing ever. And I saw LeVar Arrington, who played in the National Football League for the New York Giants and the Washington football team, and was a monster. He was a killer at Penn State. He was amazing. And I remember watching him play at Beaver Stadium, and I was too young to really understand what was happening on the field. You know, I just knew, I'm like, football's awesome. And at any given time, I was like, is LeVar on the field? And like, it'd be special teams or it'd be offense. And it's like, no, he's not out there. But like, when he was on the field, it was just electric. It was appointment television. And I remember going to a game, it was against Indiana. And for anybody that's a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, Antoine Randall-L was the quarterback for the University of Indiana. So it just shows you how much things changed for him, played wide receiver in the National Football League. So, and I remember LeVar just chasing him all over the field. So it was something that was just part of my family and then my community as a whole for years. So when I started applying to colleges, Penn State obviously was at the top of my list, but there were a lot of other schools as well. So I nearly wound up at the University of Ohio. The University of Ohio has a great journalism program. Yeah. And it just came down to I had gotten accepted to Penn State. And at the time, I was waiting on an acceptance letter of any kind or denial from the University of Ohio. So I had sent them a letter to let them know, hey, I'm accepting for Penn State. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, oh, you got into our journalism college. And I was like, okay, if I'd gotten this, maybe I would have considered this. And this maybe was the option for me to go to Athens, Ohio. But the rest is history.
I was going to say, it seemed to work out well. See, this is why I think bringing you on is also very cool because I think we have a lot in common. We're both Pennsylvania kids, both journalism, the path that we chose for our lives. I do appreciate the similarities there. For me, though, I mean, yours was LeVar Arrington. My dad was a big Penn State fan growing up. He didn't go to Penn State. I think, my dad lived in PA all his life, too. So that was just kind of what he attached himself to. For me, that player was Paul Posluszny, I think, was the first one that I vividly recall.
I've had the pleasure of having him on my podcast, Pay Dirt, Penn State Football Show, for all of you that are interested. It's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. We had him on for an episode, and he was the nicest guy. He was
That's what
so
I've heard.
Cool.
Is that he's,
oh,
that he's
my God.
Cool.
He was a wonderful guy to talk to.
Smart as hell, too. He was sort of engineering major at Penn State, wasn't he?
I don't remember exactly. I think you're right. He is now working for like a missile defense company.
Jeez.
Like I'm dead serious. I'm like shilling my podcast, but like seriously, like he explains it on the episode of Pater. Like, look it up. It's really cool. It was in the lead up to the Outback Bowl. So we had him on as a guest to kind That's of like great. Walk down memory lane with bowl games. And he was like, I'm doing this, working for this company. It's just like a civilian job, like a normal job or something like that. And he's trimmed down. Like, that's always the thing I'm really happy about for any ex-athlete is that they get to a manageable, like, build and weight. Like, Joe Thomas from the Cleveland Browns was a house, and he trimmed down, and he looks amazing. And it's like, you can't carry that weight. You can't be that big all your life. And Puzz looks great. He, you know, looks like he's doing great. He's healthy, and he's got a good job.
I was going to say that team. So the earliest memories that I have. So my mom is actually a Michigan fan and my dad is a Penn State fan. So like that was a divided household once a year. One of the earliest memories I have was the game where they put like a second back on the clock on the final play of the game. And Henny threw a touchdown pass to Mario Manningham. And that was I think that was Penn State's first loss of the year. Yeah. That was one of the early memories I had of that.
Developed a deep-seated hatred for Mario Manningham and Drew Henney because they put the extra second on the clock. Lloyd Carr was complaining to the officials. He got his way. They were in the big house. And
goddamn Lloyd
like, and then even like Drew Henney's still in the NFL, I think, is with the Chiefs.
He backs up
Mahomes.
Anything is possible.
Exactly. And like, listen, I don't hate the player because he's been in the NFL for so long. Like, he's making Chase Daniels.
Say, get his bag, man.
Like money. Oh, yeah, good for him. I'm happy whenever that happens. But, like, every time he trots out on the field, like, this little twinge of hate pops up in me. And then Mario Manningham, especially because he played for the Giants for a bit, and I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan being from the Philly area. It was just every time we played the Giants, I was reminded of that throw from heading to Manningham to beat Penn State. And I was like, memories.
I mean, they won the Big Ten that year, and they beat Florida State in the Orange Bowl. Bobby Bowden was the coach then, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was an amazing run because, like, Penn State had been not great in the early 2000s to the point that they were calling for Joe Paterno to step down or be fired altogether. Like, they were a losing football team. And the funny thing about it was, so they win the Orange Bowl. Michael Robinson's the quarterback. Tony Hunt, it was a crazy game against Florida State. So what happened is that applications to Penn State spiked because of that. So my brother got onto campus. I'm trying to think. He was he got in summer session 2005 because he kind of just beat the wave of that. So then when I applied, the numbers just went through the roof. So they were like, you have your pick of branch campuses. Like, we can't let people, because so many people are applying and so many obviously great people are applying. And I guess my grades weren't breathtaking to them. I had a good GPA. My SAT was bad. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to a branch campus. But, you know, like you said, it all worked out.
Which branch did you go to?
I went to Altoona, Pennsylvania. So for anybody that's not familiar, State College is smack dab center of the state in Pennsylvania. And then just about 45 minutes by car west is a little town called Altoona, A-L-T-O-O-N-A, affectionately known as Toontown. And that was the closest branch campus to main campus. And my goal was to commute to the main campus so that I could participate in the student radio, which is still there. It's called Comm Radio. It does amazing work. They churn out some really great talent. So I would drive there every single weekend to party with my brother and then also take part in shows. I would go during the week and take part in meetings, etc., and just trying to get my feet wet, whether it was, you know, talk radio, play-by-play for different sports, you name it. And that was like my first 2 years I had to be in Altoona. And then I got to main campus junior and senior year.
I'm glad that you had a good radio thing, because I was also in radio at Slippery Rock. And my freshman year, it was great. And then, like, my, I want to say it was my junior year. Oh, it sucked. Oh, I hated it. So then I stopped doing it. The people in charge of it. So we were completely student run. Like, we had like an advisor who, like, we would, you know, let, like, keep them informed about stuff. That way they could keep the university informed about what we were doing, but they didn't really have a say in what we were doing. So, like, the person who was in charge of it, my freshman year was really cool and things were fun, you know, did the show and whatnot. And then sophomore year after he graduated, it started kind of taking like a small turn. And then by my junior year, I just, it wasn't fun. So that's when
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, no, it's okay. I mean, it all seems to have worked out in the end, but, yeah, that is why now one of my favorite professors actually ended up taking over it. So he's trying to fix it, which is cool.
That's great.
Yeah. So, that was the radio experience for me at Slippery Rock. That's what
I'm lucky in that I've maintained a lot of relationships, not only with the guys that I went to school with, like, and I constantly, am touching base with them in regards to learning more as I'm, you know, dabbling more in the conventional sports world. They've helped me so much just in terms of like, hey, how do you prep? What do you do for these different games, et cetera? You know, just kind of playing that game, so to speak. And at the same time, I have a friend of mine who's involved in movie making, and we did a radio talk show together, and we talk about that stuff all the time. And the general manager then is still the general manager now at Com Radio. His name's Jeff Brown. He's a phenomenal human being and does a great job running the place. And then you talk about professors. I'm still very close with one of my communications professors, a guy by the name of Mike Poorman, who writes for statecollege.com. And I've had him on my podcast, and he and I touch base every once in a while, and he's just so helpful. He gave me one of my first internships, and I just have learned a lot from these people over the years. So, like, again, like, it's not just like, oh, I like Penn State because I like the football team. It's like, no, like, I'm very fortunate that my family and my friends, I've got this great network and community because I had that opportunity to go to that school, to be a part of that area. So it's just worked out, man. Not everybody can say that. So I'm very lucky.
Yeah, no, I can definitely relate to that, where, you know, I had a lot of caring people who were there to lift me up, and the entire department there, man. Like, I still talk to a lot of my professors who, like, I remember it was my freshman year. You know how, like, freshman year you have like that seminar thing that like all freshmen have to take or whatever. Did you have that?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
It's like an orientation sort
so,
of thing.
Yeah, basically. So my professor for that, she was the one of the PR heads, and she kept trying to like convert me to be a PR major. And I was like, look, you're great. I'm not doing that. But her and I became like very close, and like, so my birthday like fell the week after we left. And so the final class we had, she like got a cake and everything. And she like went the whole nine yards just because like her and I had gotten so close. And like other professors have really helped me. I still keep in contact with a ton of people who just, I wouldn't be in any sort of position I'm at without them. So I think that's the big, that's the biggest part of the college experience for me. Like outside of like, yes, obviously the, you know, the partying, the social things for four years. Fun part of it, but like when it comes to the actual schooling part of it, like if you, you know, care about what you're doing and you care about the people who, you know, want to help you, that made the experience for me that much better. Big reason why I still miss it very much.
It's a limited window, like you get to enjoy yourself. I got to study abroad second semester of sophomore year. I was in Dublin, Ireland. And even nice. Those relationships, what's that?
I bet that was nice.
Oh, it was great. It was fantastic. Yeah. 19-year-old idiot running around Dublin. But it was great. But even then, those relationships happen in a bubble. And if you manage to study abroad in college, I don't know what it's like now, but like, you know, when I was in school, it's really tough to maintain those friendships because they happen in a vacuum. And you're very lucky to be there, and usually you're getting a full ride to be there or something like that. So to maintain those friendships on the other side of it can be very difficult. But if you can, they're so rewarding. They're magnificent friendships.
There are a lot of relationships that, how do I want to word this? I think that people talk about like high school being like a big, like the quote unquote best years, like college for me, man, that was, I think the people that I've met in college have definitely helped shape my life more than those in high school did by
100%, because you have no idea who you are in high school.
Oh yeah. You can change your identity if you want to, if you go to college far away enough.
You really don't know who you are as a person until you're in your 30s. You know, seriously, like your brain is still developing well into your 20s. No, I mean, seriously, like it's one of those things, like if I knew then what I know now, and I know what I was like in high school, and I didn't enjoy high school very much, and I couldn't really find my place in the world. And I started to find it in college, and I'm really lucky that my close circle of friends, which I can count on one hand, largely came from Penn State. And those are guys that, yeah, they got to know Tom when he first was like 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. And then it's like, yeah, like that person's very different now. And they're still there. They're still backing me up. We're still in each other's lives, et cetera. There's nothing better than that.
I've been very fortunate to be blessed with a very close friend who's in the room directly across from me and has been for the past 5 years of our lives. Those are the types of like best friends throughout high school, best lived with each other throughout college, still fucking living with each other. Jesus.
with the rent. There's nothing wrong
exactly,
with that.
Yeah. Exactly. So like, no, I don't know where I would be without him and his family. So beautiful. It's great. I think that there's something to be said for having a small circle rather than, you know, a large pond.
I think simply because of the company that I used to work for and the job that I've maintained, you naturally have a large network.
Oh yeah.
You naturally meet people all over the country, all over the world sometimes. And I still don't understand that sometimes. And it can be challenging to maintain those friendships and relationships, but the important ones stick. There's no getting around that. I completely agree with you. The smaller the better in terms of your circle of friends.
I'm gonna put that on my headstone. The smaller the better.
That won't get misinterpreted.
No, not at all. Oh man. I will say this, I did have a complicated relationship with Penn State last year.
How's that?
The ex-girlfriend transferred to Penn State, which is kind of a reason why we split. So like I'm sitting there watching Penn State games, like rooting for them to win, obviously. But like in the back of my head, I'm like, I mean, this would make her angry. So like.
That little petty stuff comes up. That'll happen. But I'm sorry that happened to you.
It's okay. So what years did you go to Penn State? What years were you there?
I was there 2007 to 2011.
All right. Let's see if I can name all the quarterbacks that were there in your time. It was 2007. That was Anthony Morelli.
Yes.
Okay.
Rough. And I've not exactly said nice things about him on my podcast. Like I try to be as nice as possible.
I feel like Penn State fans don't really have much of nice.
Well, he was a guy that was hyped significantly. And it's something that like now for me, you know, being in conventional sports and wrestling, but like when there's a dude who's like a five-star recruit, everybody says he's going to walk on.
Really a five-star recruit.
I can't remember, but he was very highly touted. Like real, everybody was like, he's going to be awesome, whatever. And he could throw the ball a country mile, but that was about all of his gifts. Right. And it just didn't really work out on the field. There were a bunch of guys after the fact that followed in his footsteps and had a lot of success. And my co-host on Pater is Matt McGloin, who took the helm in 2011 and 2012, which was a pivotal year, the Jerry Sandusky scandal in 2011, the team that stuck around and was sanctioned in 2012. So there was a lot of turnover and change during that time, the end of Joe Paterno's life during that time. So, I saw a lot of quarterbacks, and it's like I would love to talk to Anthony Morelli. We've dug up some really great guests, and I get to talk to guys that – I grew up watching, and it's kind of that old adage of like, don't meet your heroes, but I'm so fortunate. I mentioned like Paul Posluszny, Allen Robinson, Tom Bahali. We've just gotten to talk to so many great guys, and every last one of them has been awesome. Like they've all been really great people. So yeah. I have yet to have a bad experience with any former Penn State player.
That entire 07 team. I mean, let's see. I think was Derek Williams still there? Like Deion Butler, Jordan Nord. They had a great receiving core.
I think that was like the tail end of when they were there. Like I'm terrible with like this guy arrived in this year and he left.
Right.
That trio was killer.
Absolutely ungodly.
Yeah.
So let's see. Morelli was 07. Daryl Clark, I think,
was
came after
Daryl, it was Daryl Clark after that, and then Daryl Clark was followed by just
Rob Bolden. Mess.
It was Rob Bolden, who was also Anthony Morelli-esque and not
You know,
great.
I remember the year they played Alabama early on in the year. I think was Rob Bolden the starter for that? Do you recall?
I think so. I want to say so. It was like, it was him. Kevin Newsom was on the roster.
Oh my God, I forgot about
Matt
Kevin
McGloin
Newsom.
Arrived in 2008, so he was battling for reps at some point. I think 2010, it was like McGloin, Bolden. They kept going back and forth.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bolden, I have tape from a game that I called at Iowa, Penn State at Iowa, and Rob Bolden's the quarterback. And it's me doing like some of my earliest play-by-play. And I still have the tape. And I remember pulling it up, like I had it and not listened to it in years. And I'm listening to it back, and it was like Bolden drops back to pass. And I was like, Bolden. And I had to remind myself, like, oh my God, Rob Bolden. And he transferred to like LSU. And there's another guy where I'm like, yeah, I'd love to talk to him and see what's going on with him.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that was Daryl Clark was okay.
Daryl Clark was very good. Oh, Daryl Clark was excellent considering
athletic. Like if he played in like this era, I feel like he could have been relatively successful at the next level.
He was because you had Michael Robinson, who transitioned from like wide receiver slash running back and then became a quarterback. And then you go to Anthony Morelli. Morelli does not do well. Daryl Clark, I think a lot of people looked at him and unfairly were like, oh, he's going to be just like Michael Robinson. Mm-hmm. And that's a dated way of looking at things. Patrick Mahomes has commented on, you know, racial stereotypes within quarterbacking. Right. I completely agree. I think that's what a lot of people thought. Daryl was a very different guy. Was he athletic and could he run? Yeah, but he wasn't that fast, you know, nimble quarterback or something like that. He could get you some yards, but ultimately he was a very good pocket passer and a very good game manager. I know that's a dirty word for quarterbacking,
but
he was a smart dude and he was a very solid quarterback. If he'd had more time as the starter, I think he could have done some really magnificent things at Penn State, but he did a really good job with the time he was there.
I can't wait to read the comments on this, by the way, like all the Impact fans who tune in are like, what the fuck? They spent 20 minutes talking about Penn State. Jesus Christ.
There's no notes. So there's no direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is Jarrett's idea, not mine.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, man. So the point of this is also because like I had Sean Ross Sapp on episode one of this, and like for every show that everybody that I talk to does, like, I imagine every interview Sean does, it's purely wrestling. Everything that Amy Trask does. Okay, fair enough about Amy Trask. Like, I love Amy Trask, and she's like one of the pioneers of women in football. So I talked about football with Amy Trask. But, you know, when I bring people on, like, this is more so to get to know them personally. Like I told you, like, this is more so to get to know Tom Hanifan, the person, not Tom Hanifan of Impact Wrestling, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, I understand that. And not to be a jerk, Hanifan.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I'm trying to win hearts and minds here with my real last name. So it's one step at a time. I had to beat that into David Penzer's head after a couple of tapings because he'd be like, Tom Hanifan. And I was like, I told you in the back that it's Hanifan. And Penzer's a sweet man. And I'm sure I'll get a lot of flack at work for saying that. But yeah, he's a nice guy.
How long did it take to like beat people out to like stop calling you Tom Phillips?
It really didn't take long. You know, it didn't take long, at least within Impact. And like, that's kind of my experience is just what it's like around Impact people. Big shout out to Brian Myers, the digital media champion as of this taping.
And big toy collector, Brian Myers.
Huge toy collector. Check out the Major Wrestling Figure podcast. Yes. He's a big fan. Brian Myers, I remember doing commentary with me in the first taping that I did after Hard to Kill. And he made a point. Whether he meant to do it or not, but like I just appreciate it, is that he drove my last name into the ground in addressing me, and he called me Hanifan multiple times. And he's a guy who understands it. He went from being Curt Hawkins to Brian Myers. You've got to get your name across. You've got to get people to remember you. So I've appreciated that from just about everybody, but there's still guys that I interact with, like Steve Macklin is one of my closest friends from back in the day in WWE. He was Steve Cutler there, and I call him Cuddy to this day, and he'll call me Phillips. And so some things stick.
Steve Macklin's fantastic, by the way.
He is outstanding. He is an outstanding talent, and I think we're just scratching the surface of what he's capable of in Impact Wrestling, because he was a tag team guy in WWE and NXT, was primarily where he got his opportunity. And, you know, he was in the Monster Factory in New Jersey. So when he got signed by WWE, he was not some big time indie name. It was not like the signings of Adam Cole and Ricochet, and the list goes on and on. Those guys that got signed by the Performance Center at that time by NXT had a really tough road to go down, because they didn't have a gimmick. They didn't have notoriety that you could just trot them out there and they'd get a reaction, good or bad. So he was trying to find, like, what's my character? What do I do? What are my things in the ring that are not being given to other talent? What can I do to stand out? And it's just it's a challenging opportunity there. So to his credit, he kept on going, got a brief run on SmackDown with the Forgotten Sons, and now in Impact Wrestling, he's doing some phenomenal work as a singles competitor. And like I said, he's just getting started.
My namesake Speedball over there is also doing fantastic stuff. I was so happy.
He's great.
I think he had just debuted when we had spoken first.
Okay.
So I think that was right around the timeline where they did that Fatal 4-Way at.
You and I spoke when? November or December?
It's somewhere in there. I can't exactly remember when, but it was somewhere.
So
in there.
He debuted at Hard to Kill.
Yeah.
And that was my debut as well. He had been unable to compete in the United States. So for him to get that opportunity with Impact Wrestling was huge. And he was awesome. I'd never seen any of his work before that. Like, I had done as much research as I could, but I was like, all right, well, there's something to discovering a guy live and just seeing what he can do. And I was wowed. I had so much fun calling that match with D'Lo Brown. And that was on the pre-show. That was on the countdown to Hard to Kill. Yeah. It's still on YouTube. You can check it out. He was awesome. And now he's X Division champion. He's doing a really, really good
job. Hell of a match
job.
That was too, by the way, Ultimate X.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's Slammiversary. He wins the X Division championship. So he's defending it again on Friday, August 12th at Emergence. That's live on Impact Plus, Fight TV, and YouTube for Ultimate Insiders. It's in Chicago if you feel like heading out there. So yeah, he is outstanding. And again, he's another guy who I think is just getting acclimated to working TV on a regular basis. And that's a good thing, because he's already pretty darn good. And once he puts it all together, he's going to have a nice, nice product.
There's so much emerging talent that I'm happy you're starting to get recognized. Cause for a while there, like, Impact was like the little promotion that could, it was still holding on. It went through a bunch of name changes, like Global Force Wrestling for a minute, back to Impact and whatnot. So seeing them kind of rise, it's been so awesome. I'm so happy for you that you're the voice of this. And just a roster full of talent that is so much fun to watch week in and week out. How has it been, by the way? Mia Yim showed up. I was so happy to see her.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, I remember seeing her at Under Siege, and I was just so happy to see her again. She's just this ray of light as a human being. So it's been really cool to see her get added to what's just a crazy good knockouts division, the women's division in Impact Wrestling. Before it was something popular to say on TV, was doing stuff that was revolutionary, that was different within women's wrestling. So adding Mia to the mix is just a fantastic fit. But yeah, dude, it's been a lot of familiar faces. And I think the thing that I liked when I showed up in Impact is that, yeah, there were some familiar faces, people I'd worked with in WWE, but everybody to one degree or another, whether they're coming up or they were veterans, is that they all have something to prove. Everybody has a chip on their shoulder. I have a chip on my shoulder. I have something to prove. So I really enjoy working with those people. And to your point, it's pretty well known that AEW basically grabbed the production department of Impact Wrestling when they got off the ground. They're still based in Nashville. So imagine if your spinal cord was ripped out of your body and you had to keep walking. That's exactly what Impact Wrestling did. And they're still here. We just celebrated 20 years of Impact Wrestling at Slammiversary in June. So I respect the hell out of everybody there that has kept the train moving, because it is a damn good wrestling show. And I know, yeah, I work for them, but as an unbiased wrestling fan, it's a really good show.
As somebody who grew up on that golden era of TNA with, you know, guys like Kurt Angle, Sting, Christian Cage, the triple threat with the infamous one with AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, like, that was some of the defining wrestling of that era. Not just that era, though, of the past 30 years. And so to see them and to see guys like Scott D'Amore still pushing the hell out of this promotion and making it as great as it is today, it's fantastic. And I love Josh Alexander. That is anytime he's I talk awesome. About Impact, I have to say I love two people, and that is Josh Alexander and Deonna Purrazzo. So
they're both excellent. Seriously, Deonna is as good as she says she is. Josh Alexander, I have a lot of respect for because I've just gotten to talk to him as a man to man, just as a human being. Right. I was so impressed. I remember we did Under Siege in Cincinnati. I think it was in early May. And he had unfortunately been in a car accident the day before. He just bought a new truck, And he was driving from Canada to Cincinnati, which I think it's like a 7 or 8 hour drive, something like that. Halfway there, a Mack truck veers in front of his truck and basically smashes his truck into the median. And as a part of that, trying to pull away, rips the front of the truck off and just keeps on going. Thankfully, Josh and the passenger were not injured. And it was just more of a bummer because his brand new truck was destroyed. Right. Now he's got to get a rental and he's got to make it all the way to Cincinnati. So when I saw him, he obviously had already been through the ringer. Oh, and by the way, the next day he's got a world title defense against Tomohiro freaking Ishii. So it's like not exactly an easy day at the office. Ishii lit him up and Josh gave it right back to him. So I have so much respect for what he did there. And not to cast aside Deonna Purrazzo, but she's somebody that, you know, I crossed paths with her very briefly in WWE. And now she's really found her footing in Impact Wrestling. I believe she was part of the first women's main event in the history of AEW Dynamite. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Mercedes Martinez.
The Ring of Honor Women's World Championship match. So, I mean, she's doing some things that I don't know she ever dreamed that she could do. And I think when you watch her out there, she is in the zone. She is very, very comfortable. Now her teaming with Chelsea Green, the tag team known as Vexed, they are really, really fun to watch. They're awesome.
And not to mention the fact of being, while Kenny Omega was collecting belts, she was doing a little bit of the same at the same time.
Yeah. We talk about it all the time. Like Matthew Raywalt's her biggest fan, obviously, but she was, she's been a champ. She's been a double champion twice. There's a lot of women in the history of professional wrestling in any major promotion, especially WWE, that can't say that they've accomplished that. For her to have captured the Knockouts title, the AAA Reina de Reinas title, the Ring of Honor Women's Championship, like, she's done a lot, and I think she's just getting started, which is crazy. She's going to set some records.
No, I cannot wait to have her on the show sitting across in your spot right now. That is going to be a show. I'm very much looking forward to that.
Definitely hit her up. Yeah.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry, my friend. I'm way ahead of you. I'm way ahead of you on that. So I did. Yeah, it was obvious. I couldn't not talk to you about Impact because obviously this has been a big this past year for Impact has been the best year for that company for a while. And I'm just so happy to see everyone in that promotion thriving. And it's just great to watch every week. And it's a fantastic wrestling, man. And I'm very happy that you're a part of it.
Thank you. They had to come out of the pandemic just like everybody else.
Oh, yeah. And,
I mean, I experienced it in WWE, and that working in front of no fans sucks.
How was that, by the way?
Eerie, really eerie. Because like the first few weeks and months, there's no crowd whatsoever. And then, we had to compensate for it. So you're talking more. You're jacked up like it's the craziest thing you ever saw because you got to fill the airspace. Right. It was just very strange. It was like being on a movie set or something like that, not necessarily in an arena. And then I had somebody remind me, because I had a chance to be part of the card for the pay-per-view event called Ric Flair's Last Match recently in Nashville. And I think that was in front of something north of like 8,000 fans. No disrespect to Conrad Thompson. I think it was 10,000, somewhere 47,000 people anyway. So it's a lot of people. And I was like, wow, I was like, this is really cool. This is awesome. And a friend of mine was like, yeah, you hadn't been in front of an arena, a stadium size, you know, not a football stadium, but an arena of that size since before the pandemic hit in March of 2020.
Jesus.
And I was like, oh, that's why that felt so, you know, so awesome. And on top of that, it was Ric Flair's last match. Like, I couldn't believe I was part of the card. So there was a lot of stuff that kind of all came into one in that night. It was just incredibly special. I'm so grateful that Rick and Conrad gave me that opportunity.
No, congratulations on that, man. That is very, very well deserved. It was you, Shivani was there. Was Mauro Ranallo there?
No, it was so it was Tony Schiavone and David Crockett who were kind of holding things down on commentary through the entirety of the night. And then myself, Ian Riccaboni, Joe Dombrowski, Scott Damore, and Dave Grazak, I think is how you say his name. I might be butchering his name. All kind of rotated in and represented our respective companies.
That's great. It was a hell of a card too, by the way.
It was really neat. It was like, you don't see that very often anymore. It's either this promotion's doing something or that promotion's doing something.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was the definition of a variety show, really. I mean,
It was a great opportunity for a lot of showcase matches. And then you also got these dream matches. I got to call for a minute Alexander versus Fatu, and that got ruined by the major players. Talk about Brian Myers, that SOB. So, but no, it was great. You just don't see that very often. I know AEW just did Forbidden Door with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and WWE obviously keeps themselves. So it's just, you don't see that very often. And to get that type of cooperation, it speaks to who Ric Flair is and what he means to professional wrestling. He is a phenomenon in Americana and pop culture. Like, he transcends wrestling. So it made sense that so many great people came together to make that happen.
Do you think that now, under new leadership in WWE, we could see a crossover thing like that? Not even necessarily in like the near future, but like, you know, at some point.
I don't know. Maybe, you know, what's the old adage? Never say never. So
sure,
WWE seems to be doing just fine. They have been for a long time. So, I think it was cool to see something like New Japan Pro Wrestling against AEW, Forbidden Door. You know, it was cool. But yeah, who knows?
I feel like they need to start calling that something else too, by the way, because the door isn't so forbidden anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty wide open at this point. Yeah, I don't know. I think they have the copyright on it, so there's that.
Oh, good for them.
Good for them.
Yeah. Pro wrestling's great.
That's fun. Dude, I love it. Like, it's a variety show, as you mentioned, you know, whether it was Ric Flair's last match or any show, like, you get to run the full gamut of emotions, at least as a commentator, and then you just get so many different things all at once. And like, I love doing what I'm doing with Matthew Raywalt right now. Like, we had
I'm so happy for him too. But
yeah. Oh, he's
great.
Criminally underrated in the world of color commentators and professional wrestling. The fact that he's working for two different companies, New Japan and Impact, and doing,
I don't know how in God's name he does that.
Cause he's really smart and he's really good at what he does. but he gets to be, you know, more of the sports analyst with New Japan Pro Wrestling. And then when he sits with me, he turns up the heel, dial, so to speak. He's awesome. And like, he was the best sign of a good, like, co-host is somebody who can make you laugh on air. And like, D'Lo Brown has said that to me, but like, I've laughed on air with Corey Graves, Samoa Joe, Byron Saxton, Cole, JBL, King, like Booker. Oh my God, especially Booker.
I can imagine Booker.
Yeah, and just I'm so fortunate I've had all these great partners, and then like got to work with D'Lo for a night, and he was great. And then Matthew Raywalt, like the episode of Impact that aired not this Thursday but the week prior, like I was in stitches like every other segment, and I was like, this is great. I get paid to do this. I'm pretty happy.
So. In my head, like, I was wondering, how the hell can Matt do that? But then I remember, you like, Impact schedule, I mean, it's much lighter because, you know, most of it is, you know, taped in advance and whatnot. So that's
true.
I'm sure that's easier on his schedule, being able to do both shows then.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely helpful. And then New Japan, I think, runs a similar style stateside right now. They're taping a lot of shows.
Okay.
So, it just makes everybody's life a little bit easier. So it's fun to do live television. I love doing live television. I'm really excited about Emergence, and anytime we go live, it's special. But being able to tape shows and take a little time off, there's nothing wrong with that.
Still got a rampant crowd there who, you know, I think Impact has that like really domestic environment where it's just, it kind of reminds me of like classic ECW, where it's just like, you know, how many fans are, I don't know if you know this at the top of your head, but like if you had to guess, like an average like Impact TV taping, how many do you guys have usually?
I really don't know. I can't say I pay attention to all that much. I have my horse blinders on, but no, I agree with you in terms of it's got that underground feel.
Yes, it's intimate.
And listen, my experience was WWE before this, so I had chances to work NXT UK and especially NXT Black and Gold. When I look at what Impact is now, it feels a lot like Triple H's vision for NXT Black and Gold.
Yes.
And then especially working NXT UK, it's a very similar production style. It's a very similar layout based on the venue. So when I got into Impact and they explained what the schedule and the taping regimen was like to me, I was like, oh yeah, that's no problem. I've done that before. So that made it really, really simple. And I personally just love those environments, because when you can get that size crowd to be raucous, it feels phenomenal. It's a really special feeling.
Was it always pro wrestling for you that like you wanted, you know, was this always the vision, or was it, you know, perhaps a different,
No. And I've talked about this on other shows, but like I grew up and I was a casual fan of pro wrestling. My parents were not really cool with me watching wrestling, 'cause you can imagine. So like I was born in 1989. So the height of the Attitude Era is late '90s, early 2000s. So I'm like 10, and I'm trying to throw on, you know, what I affectionately refer to sometimes as a sex, drugs, rock and roll era of professional wrestling. Would your parents let you watch that stuff? You know, it's, there was some stuff that was on TV where I was like, yeah, no, I totally understand it. It was like fun because it felt rebellious, etc. And I would sneak down to the basement and I would watch Monday Night Raw on like one volume and kind of hide out and hopefully mom and dad don't find me. So I was into wrestling. I played the video games. I played WWF No Mercy on N64, the same with WCW versus NWO Revenge. I was into the video games. And then I think once I started being able to play football in seventh grade, really got more into the sports side in high school and college. And when I went to college, I was majoring in broadcast journalism, sports journalism specifically. So that was my goal, was to wind up in something in conventional sports. And then the opportunity with WWE came around when I was 23. So, I mean, like 2012. So I was just like, I got really lucky and I just, you know, I was brand new to everything and they taught me a lot.
You know, for somebody who has, and not to say that I'm anywhere near the extent that you are, but for the past year who has ventured into more wrestling stuff, it's so, to me, that's like my, I don't know, for lack of a better term, my escape. Like wrestling's like my playtime when it comes to like talking about it or whatnot. Like don't get me wrong, like football will always be that thing that drives me and like want to do it. But I think that having that, you know, that other thing that you can turn to and be like, yes, let's go do a podcast about wrestling. Let's go talk. Like, I think it's nice to have that as, you know, a second, at least for me. I don't know. Like does like doing Penn State, doing the Pater and whatnot, is that like, do you, I don't want to say, do you enjoy doing that more than wrestling, but like, is that comparing the two, is it like a different feeling almost rather?
It's very different. They're satisfying in two completely different ways. Wrestling has become my passion. Yeah, you can say that I wasn't a diehard fan growing up, but sure, I became a huge fan of doing this. And I love doing commentary. It's for all the ups and downs in my life, being able to put on a headset and talk about wrestling for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. It's an escape. And it's just, you get to play make-believe for a little while and just get lost and have fun with these, you know, this kaleidoscope of characters. It's so much fun. And there's a million different things that go into those shows that make them complicated, challenging, but fun. Then when it comes to doing conventional sports, it's these things that I take, they're more parts of my childhood, I think. And as I mentioned, you know, Penn State is a big part of my childhood altogether. So now to be interacting with former players and they're telling me that they watch the show, that they listen to the show and they want to come on the show and they like the show, I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever, because the little kid in me is like, oh yeah, like you could have a show where you're talking to your quote unquote heroes or just guys that you watch playing, then you respect them. It's so cool. Like I just get to be a fan at the end of the day. I know I'm supposed to be the host and the broadcaster, but I'm sitting there just being like, oh, this is cool, man. I'm a fly on the wall for a conversation. And especially for my co-host is Matt McGloin. He played with a lot of these guys and they don't always keep in touch. Like anybody that went to college together, they don't talk all the time. So I get to witness some reunions. Like these guys haven't seen each other in years and they're just like, oh, remember this, remember that. It's so much fun, man. It's really cool.
No, it's great. I was going to say, recently you had Derek Moy on the show recently, right?
Yes. Yeah, we just had Derek Moy on the show. We've gotten some
Did him and McGloin play together? I feel like they did.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, Derek Moy got on campus, I think, in 2007. So they overlapped for a good amount. McGloin got on campus in 2008. So yeah, they played together a lot, and McGloin pretty much, I don't want to say Moy was his favorite target, but you knew who was going to be the game changer wide receiver for that group. Nothing against Brett Brackett and Graham Zug, who we've also had on the show.
Oh my goodness, Tom, you just took me down like a hot tub time machine. Oh, it's my the best. Goodness. Yes.
But there was these incidents, like as we're talking to Derek Moy, is that I joked that McGloin kind of had this attitude of like, even if his eyes were covered, he'd be like, you know, that old adage of screw it, Moy's down there somewhere. And it worked somewhere. A lot. It worked a lot. So it was really neat because we got Brackett and Zug on the same episode. And we were like, man, we got to get Derek Moy. And it took us a minute to track him down, but we got him. So we've had a lot of really cool guests on the show, and we have plenty more to come. As we continue to reach out, we're just trying to, we like being like the players podcast, because I personally sympathize with players in terms of all the developments with NIL, name, image, and likeness benefits. I'm like, yeah, get your money. These could be the four best years of your life. It's the Tim Tebow model. And that was really, I think, the core of why NIL came around. And we all know how the EA video games changed, how it's like, hey, that's me, you know, in like the EA basketball game. Like,
that's not you. That's quarterback number 16.
Who was the UCLA player that was like, that was me.
That's going to piss
me off. I can't remember who.
I watched a legend. I watched the John Oliver episode about it, and he was in it, and they thought, yeah. Oh, man. That's going to piss me off.
Absolute legend. I'll look it up. I'm sure somebody in the comments will pull it up. But that, and then the football game, everybody was like, these kids aren't getting paid for this. And to the point about Tim Tebow, at one point when he was a Florida Gator, his jersey was the most popular jersey in American sports, period.
Yeah, not just college, but sports.
Period. And he was asked, they're like, wouldn't you want to cut of that money? And he was very, you know, Tebow.
Tim Tebow
and he was
about like, it.
The University of Florida gave me an opportunity to get an education and play football. I want them to have that money. It's like, fair. There's other guys who are like, yeah, that's my name and number. That's my likeness. I remember when Johnny Manziel got in trouble for selling autographs, and he sat out like one half of football.
The Alabama game.
Yeah. And he came back in and he lit it up. And I was like, I love that guy because he beat the system.
Yeah.
So I am all for players getting their chance to make some money, because you don't know when it could all be over. And you're the best years of your life from a money-making perspective could be those 4 years in college.
Yeah.
So why not make the most of that situation? So I am firmly on the side of the players in all of this stuff when it comes to NIL, transferring, going early to the NFL draft. I'm like, make your money, take care of yourself, take care of your family.
You ever seen the movie The Program?
Yes, love The Program.
The,
great
the
movie.
Scene where Darnell Jefferson awesome tells Alvin Mack that he just got money from a booster. He's like, you take your money where you can get it because the NCAA assholes don't let us have jobs. That's my one of my favorite quotes.
Such a good movie. I remember playing high school football, and our center invited my brother and I over to his house and like a couple other players to like watch The Program. And he did that regularly, like every couple of weeks or every other year. He'd be like, oh, we're watching The Program. I'm like, we watched this at Alex's house before, but I was like, that's a good movie. I'm definitely going over to watch it. And I was like, this is an awesome flick. Now that I'm thinking of it, I'm definitely going to watch that this week.
I haven't seen it in a minute. One of my favorite movies of all time. I can if I like put a number on it, I think I've seen that movie no less than 40 times.
Okay. That's way more than me, but
I love that movie, man. Pull it up. Well, yeah. I had it on, well, my dad had it on DVD when I was growing up. So I just watched it a ton. So yeah, great movie. Anytime I can work The Program into a show, it's a good show.
Not easy. This is a challenging movie for a lot of PG programming, but I definitely need to check that out again.
That's a perfect segue, because I do like to dive into the interests of guests. Sean Ross Sapp collects toys, and he likes Doja Cat. And
I don't know Sean, so I can't say I would guess what it is, but Doja Cat is so here's a funny story. The only way I became aware of Doja Cat was Dave season 2.
Really? Okay. Oh, that's Lil Dicky's show, right?
Yeah, Lil Dicky's show, the rapper from Philadelphia. It's on FX. It's called Dave. His
it
real
is
name.
Funny.
Dave.
It is.
It's an awesome, awesome show. Me and some of my closest friends are obsessed with this show. However, my friends know I'm like just wildly out of touch with things in pop culture. So like Doja Cat's on there and I'm like, who's Doja Cat? And my one friend looks at me and she was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you've never heard of Doja Cat? She's one of the biggest stars in the world. And she's so sweet. And she comes across like in the episode, she's so sweet and she comes across so likable. And I was like rooting for Doja Cat. And then Dave's character really just isn't very nice to her. And I was like, oh, Doja Cat's just trying to find love. Like, what's wrong with that? So there was a lot of stuff. And then Benny Blanco. I never heard of Benny Blanco. And I've heard the name.
Who is Benny Blanco?
One of my best friends from North Carolina is like, you're kidding me. Like, Benny Blanco produced a lot of Justin Bieber's stuff, and he's done a million things in music and entertainment. And I just never heard of him. And then when you see him as a human being, you're like, oh, I wouldn't have expected this person to look like this. And he was just so ridiculous on the show. It was hysterical. So I've learned a lot from that show. I'm really excited. Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, I'm not in touch with, like, the rap music culture too much, but Dave is funny. I watched a decent amount of that. Trying to figure out what music you enjoy just by looking at you. Let's see if I can pick that apart real quick.
Probably an easy guess.
you seem like a guy that would enjoy a little bit of country music.
A little bit of country music. Yeah, yeah. I lived in Orlando for 3 years, so just being in the sunshine and then being like easily accessible to beaches and then just kind of general Florida culture. Right. Country music was on a lot.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Do you like rap music then, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely listen to a fair amount of rap. I have, okay. It's the most difficult question you can ask anybody is like, what kind of music do you listen to? I almost want to punch somebody in the face. Nothing against you or whatever. It's like, what kind of music do you like? I'm like, I don't have 45 minutes to explain what kind of music I like, because it's all based on mood. It's based on company. Sure, it's based on environment. There are some instances where I'm like, hey, I'm at the beach and it's a beautiful day. I'm going to throw on some country music. And then there's other times I'm at the gym. There's going to be a fair amount of Linkin Park and Limp Bizkit or something like that. There's other days where I'm just chilling, and yeah, you can probably guess this guy likes John Mayer. Yep. So there's all sorts of things that it's like, okay, you know, it's I'm all over the map, and I think everybody's all over the map with music. You meet a person that they're like, I listen to one genre of music and it's house music, and
that person's a dick.
They're insane. So variety, I think, is best when it comes to music.
Can you guess what I like by looking at me?
Our boy Matty Fresh from Penn State.
Matty Fresh. Oh, the Trace McSorley guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a buddy.
Shit you not, man. What was it? One of my friends is at Cardinals camp, because he covers the Cardinals, and he tweeted a clip of McSorley, and I tweeted like, inhales deeply, and was like, throw it on a dime, and
I gotta admit, it's Jahan Dotson's song. Very catchy.
There's a Jahan Dotson song?
It's a Jahan Dotson song. It's really good. Yeah.
Oh, I gotta hear that. I haven't heard that yet.
I'm a little bit like, come on, man, don't be such a Penn State football fan that this is what you listen to. And I threw it on and I was like, yeah, it's a really catchy hook. It's really good. But we had Trace on the podcast.
And I'm jealous. I love Trace McSorley.
He was the nicest guy. And I asked him, I was like, are you aware that your song, Trace McSorley, has 7 million plus views on YouTube? Absurd. And he was like, I did not know that. And he's like, it just took on this life of its own.
Dude, when he threw his first touchdown in Baltimore, the NFL account, like, in their caption for it, like, quoted the song.
Like, oh, yeah. Well, because when he got drafted, it's the thing that drives me nuts about NFL draft coverage. It's why I don't watch it anymore, is that they'll pick like the most obscure thing about this guy. Like, guy eats the center of Oreos only. And I'm like, I don't care. Go away. Like, I'm sick of people talking about it. I'm like, I'm here to watch football stuff. And it's like, he likes Diet Sunkissed.
Yes, like, it's like that, like a crap dating show where like they give like two normal facts about a person, but the third one's like always out of left. Like, this is Gary, he's from Indiana, and he hates purple gift wrap. Like, what the fuck is that?
There's no, it's either fantastical or catastrophic. It's either like some horrible thing that happened to him to the point where I'm depressed.
Like, yeah.
And I understand the goal there is that you want to root for him and he's an underdog and you support him and you care about him. I can be all those things, but I'm like, I want to be excited about the future of my team, and you're bumming me out, or you're telling me something silly.
Yeah.
There's got to be a happy medium. So that's why I don't watch the NFL draft coverage anymore. I just like, oh, it's on my phone. Done.
Diet Sunkissed. That was a good one. That was good. You were guessing what Matty Fresh. Yes, you guessed it. I did enjoy the Trace McSorley song. Yes,
he's good. Yeah, go check out Matty Fresh's other stuff.
Check out the Jahan Dotson one. But I mean, I like today, like modern rock, metal stuff, country. Those are like the two big ones. I'll send you some stuff.
Go for it. Yeah. I listen to, I have a lot of different, artists I listen to, but I love Mac Miller. I'm a big fan of Mac Miller. So
here's the thing about that, Tom. I don't dislike Mac Miller, but when you live in Pittsburgh and when you go out to Jimmy D's on a Friday night and they play the spins every weekend, everywhere you go, after a while, you're like, all right, I don't need to hear this song for the rest of my life.
Well, you know how liberally in Philadelphia they play Dreams and Nightmares by Meek
Mill? Jesus. Like,
I love that song, but like they just beat it to death.
Yeah,
it happens. That's every major city when it's like, oh, that's our guy, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it, but like I'm not a big rap fan to begin with, and I'm sure that like I didn't listen to much Mac Miller prior to his passing, and I think that afterwards it just blew up. So yeah, this is good for, like, I'm not shitting on your music taste, by the way.
No, but like that's the thing, is like you get in the car with somebody and they're like, oh, I don't like your playlist, and I'm like, it's mine.
Yeah, because it's mine.
I didn't make this for you. I don't care what your ears want to hear. I am interested in what makes me happy. Or
can I tell you a few of my guilty pleasures? Good. I will say I have at least 75 One Direction songs that I know word for word.
Okay, that is 75 more than I do. I can't say I know. I'm sure, like, if you played one, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I've heard that
I'm
before.
Sure, like, if I couldn't name one direction
song. Yeah. I've had a couple of people tell me, it's like, Harry Styles has some decent stuff.
Like, he does. Genuinely, yeah, he does.
Yeah. But then instantly, like, if you tell somebody you like Justin Bieber, they immediately, I think, go to, like, the teenage version of Justin Bieber. And I'm like, no, I'm like, Bieber the last 5 years is like
some good stuff.
I'm a fan. And again, everybody can be like, this guy likes Justin Bieber. That's shocking. It's like, yeah, he's got some decent stuff. Go away.
He does. I remember when I'm the One came out and I was obsessed with that song.
Yeah, that was popular.
That was like the bop of the summer. Was that 2017? That was the year I graduated high school.
It's the song of the summer, like Fetty Wap. Yeah. Fetty Wap, what year was that?
Like 2016?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't very.
One of my closest friends from North Carolina, every time I see him, he's like, I've got like a dozen songs to help supplement your listening. And I pretty much learn everything from him from a music standpoint.
Fetty Wap came to Slippery Rock like the year before, like at the peak of his popularity. I don't know how the hell they afforded him, but he was there the year before I got there. So that must have been a fun time.
I'm always amazed, like State College, Pennsylvania, the Bryce Jordan Center where the Penn State basketball team plays. They get some great acts.
They
get Drake in there on a regular basis. I think Adele has been through there. Like, they have done some amazing business for a town that is largely in the middle of nowhere. No disrespect. I love the town, but it's like they do really well.
I'm trying to think of the ones that we had when I was there. Like, there's usually, I think, the like student program board, like they would try to book like two speakers per semester and two concerts per semester. So who did we have? I remember Simple Plan was there.
Love Simple Plan.
Simple Plan's great.
Big Simple Plan fan. Yeah.
They played the What's New Scooby-Doo theme song and I could have died a happy man. That was great.
There's so much like that late 90s. Would you call it emo? Like punk, I think, is like, not the appropriate term for it.
Yeah, no, they're not. Definitely not like punk. You could call them emo, I guess.
Emo rock or something like that. Yeah,
I think that's probably about. Yeah, I agree.
Simple Plan, Newfound Glory.
You're probably a big Yellow Card guy.
Yellow Card, yeah, there's Yellow Card. Ocean Avenue is a solid CD. Yeah, this is there's so much music that you could be like, yeah, what's this normal looking white guy, this unassuming white guy, like probably Yellow Card, probably John Mayer, probably Justin Bieber.
Were you a big My Chemical Romance guy?
a couple, not a ton, but like Black Parade. I love Black Parade. That's a great song. But yeah, I can't say I went deep into
I remember the first My Chemical Romance song I heard. I was in like first grade. I heard the song Teenagers and I was like, I don't know what this is, but I love it.
Well, I forget when Good Charlotte was hot. I was not like super into Good Charlotte, but
that's probably like 2000, like 06 or like 08-ish.
So I was still,
I don't want to be in
back
love.
Back end of high school for me. Yeah. It's like, I can't remember the names of the songs, but if I heard them, I'd immediately, you know how like you remember every song from your childhood or from like high school, but I can't remember like if I did laundry or not.
Yeah.
Like I can remember every freaking lyric. And I was like, if I could have ripped this out of my head for like some useful information, that would be great.
It would be great. Oh man. That era of music just, oh God, it ruled.
That was great. Well, I followed a lot of my brother's lead with whatever he was listening to. So like it took me probably 3 Newfound Glory albums to be like, this is the same album every time. This is a different song. And I would just, and after a while I was like, okay, I can stop. And I've gotten, you know, enough of Newfound Glory and I can and move on to somebody else.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Now for me, it's, who are the big ones that I really like? Ice Nine Kills is my favorite band. Check, I think you would enjoy them.
I'll look that up.
Do you like horror movies?
No. Oh, no. Oh. I'm so jumpy. I scare very easily. So
well, their whole gimmick is that they do songs about horror movies. Their last 2 albums have been horror movie based. It's pretty good.
Oh, okay.
It's still cool, though. Great music.
There's so many people that I worked with in WWE who are huge horror movie fans, huge Halloween fans. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch whatever, you know, It or something like that. And I was like, no. No, what, like Kayla Braxton is like a huge fan of horror movies. And
really?
Like, oh yeah, like I'm so excited for this. I'm gonna watch this really messed up movie, and I'm like, I can't do it because what drives me nuts is like I like old school horror movies. I like the original Halloween, where it's more of a thriller.
Oh, buddy, yeah, you don't gotta tell me. Like that's
you go.
My favorite movie of all time.
It's building the suspense and the terror appropriately, and it's a good film. So many horror movies in the last 20 years are just, it's a jump cut and there's a screech and there's some CGI, like blah, something comes out. And I'm like, you didn't actually accomplish a good story. You
like just, anybody could do something.
You
like
just
that.
Dressed it up and you made me go, you know, which is easy to do. And I know myself, but I also don't understand the people who are like, I want to go to a movie theater and be like, like for 90 minutes. I'm like, no, this sounds terrible.
I don't know what it is, but it's just fun being scared. I don't like knowing
not for me, man.
Knowing that there's like no actual danger, but it's just fun.
There's some video on Vic Joseph. He's on NXT 2.0 of him jumping out of a locker in a locker room, I think somewhere in Atlanta, and scaring me. And I just tense up like this. I hate it. And Matt Bloom would do that to me all the time. My brother did that to me constantly growing up. And I was just like, yeah, I understand where all of it comes from. And I can't overcome it.
No, oh, that's funny. I was going to add on to that real quick, but I forget what I was. Oh, damn it. That's going to piss me off. Oh, yeah. Music. Motionless and White. You know who they are?
What was that again?
Motionless and White.
No, can't say no.
I'm just going to keep naming white guy bands and hope that one of these sticks.
Probably will. Yeah.
I told Sean the same thing. And like, it's hard to find people who are into, like, maybe not hard, just people I've talked to just haven't been into it. And I'm going to keep asking the same questions at the end until I find somebody who's like, oh, yeah, I fucking love them.
Yeah. It's really cool when you do meet somebody that has like your exact same taste in music. And I every once in a while bump into somebody like one of my closest friends who lives in Maryland. He and I have like that same emo rock. Right. Love. So like I remember showing him my playlist of, he's like I love this. And I was like, great, like those are really special relationships I think that you can develop. And I remember working with somebody in WWE where we both realized we both loved the Ocean Avenue Yellow Card album, and I was like, it's a good album, like it's top to bottom, I enjoy it. So it's just really cool. And then when you find those people, like I mentioned my buddy in North Carolina, is like, hey man, like, can you send me some new stuff? I just need something new, as opposed to like going on to Spotify. Like, you might like this.
Yeah. Or,
I don't know. I get bored of going through that and trial and error. And I'm like, I feel like I end up wasting 20 minutes of just skipping through 30 seconds.
I can agree with that.
30 seconds.
I will say like that weekly, whatever the hell it's called, where they try to help you find new music. I found some good stuff in there. I found some crap too, but like,
yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very hit and miss when it comes to that. You say you don't like horror movies. Do you have a favorite movie of all time?
I love comedies. I love to laugh. So, I mean, like, it seems like a cliche answer, but like Animal House just never gets old.
Yeah.
Animal House was great. Caddyshack is just awesome. I love Mel Brooks movies.
Okay.
Mel Brooks comedies like Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Young Frankenstein. anything like that where it's just like silly,
silly
stuff. And a lot of it is like puns and like wordplay. Like you just said this thing and it turns the whole scene on its head. I love just silly humor where, again, it's, you were talking about wrestling or something like that. Not saying wrestling silly, but it's a chance to just kind of get lost and turn off your brain for a minute. I love doing that with just great silly comedies where I'm like, I can just get lost in how stupid this comedy is and just lose it. It's the best.
You look like a guy that sounds like a guy who would enjoy Beavis and Butthead.
You know, I didn't get into Beavis and Butthead that much. Like I
Tom,
tried.
We look like handsome Butthead and handsome Beavis right now. You can't.
I tried to get into it. I don't know if that was something maybe that my parents weren't cool with. I can't remember exactly, but like I watched a lot of South Park.
Oh, okay. Well,
I love South Park.
Dude, I've never seen an episode of South Park that hasn't made me audibly like belly laugh at least once. That show doesn't miss.
I started losing interest in it when it got more about a show that was like commenting on society and current events.
Yeah, that's fair.
The first run, like those, I forget how many seasons before they really started doing that, but when it was based on the characters and the stories,
just the kids being kids.
When Cartman makes Scott Tenorman eat his parents. Such a good episode.
It's fantastic.
It's a wonderful, wonderful story. And then when they started doing stuff that was more commentary based, it was cool because people were like, oh, they spoofed this, they spoofed that. And I'm like, after a while, it was like, they spoofed everything. And I'm like, you're losing me a little bit. So I still like it. I'll still flip it on. I love Family Guy.
Family Guy is fantastic.
Like any sort of like most like cartoons where it's like adult humor or something like that, like a Family Guy or the early seasons of Archer.
Archer is so really underrated. Good. I love Archer.
Another one where it's just silly, a lot of wordplay, and I don't know. I love that.
No, phrasing is still a very big part of my vocabulary.
And in a lot of ways, I identified with Archer because I was like, I'm wearing a suit and I'm supposed to be professional and such, but in my head, I'm just like, I just want to be funny or I want to be silly or something like that and just do something that'll make like my co-host laugh or whatever, or just not take things so deathly seriously, even though I'm buttoned up in a suit.
That's fantastic. They need a new James Bond. How's your British accent? Have you thought about like movie acting?
It's not great. if I thought about movie acting, I mean, it's not that I wouldn't entertain it or something like that. God knows nobody's beating down my door to do it. And I think for James Bond, you have to be,
I was gonna say,
you have to be older. Like, I don't think I look old enough to be James Bond. I think they'd be like, why is there a 12-year-old playing James Bond or something? So, I'm patting myself on the back as I'm saying that, but yeah, I love James Bond growing up. I was always a big fan of that. It's rough just because like every other movie's good and bad.
And it kind of ebbs and flows.
But I always liked James Bond. But
I got Connery right above my shoulder. It's my dude.
Connery was the best. Connery had some. The Connery Bond was my favorite Bond.
Connery. The SNL Connery Celebrity Jeopardies got me back into Sean Connery, I think.
Oh, God. That was like my brother and I would recite that.
Dude, Kurt Ferguson,
we were blue in the face. Yeah.
And your wife shits on my face, Trebek.
There's so many that SNL just nailed with those celebrity jeopardies. And
that was one of
them.
To
this day, I don't know how Will Ferrell pulled that stuff off. Crazy. Because everybody looks at Connery. It's the actor.
I cannot remember the actor.
Daryl Hammond?
It might have been Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond. He was outstanding, obviously. It's this thing in entertainment. It's almost harder to be the straight man. It's fun to be big and bombastic and crazy. It's another thing to sit there and not laugh and just be the pivot point for the scene or for the joke. Like, that's really, really difficult.
Yeah, Will Ferrell... Bless his heart. I think he gets a lot of credit for how talented he is, yet he still doesn't get enough because what he was able to do, I couldn't do that. I couldn't keep it together in that situation.
Oh, it was crazy. And then also being the straight guy for a lot of like a movie like The Other Guys, but being able to go back and forth and
such a great movie.
Be crazy and be the Gator character for a second and then come back to being the straight man, the stuff with Eva Longoria. Was he Eva Longoria or
Eva Mendes? Eva Mendes.
Oh my God. And Mark Wahlberg just being like, shut up. This isn't your wife. Like it was that movie. Look,
they can't all be first round picks.
Like, I showed that movie to my dad not long ago. And the first run through, he was like, hey, it was funny. You know, this was cool. And I was like, this is the type of movie that if you watch it like five times, not like consecutively, but like every time you watch it, you'll notice something different. It's such a good movie.
I think that might be my favorite Ferrell movie. Not like he's just so on point on that and so just like funny without really having to do much of anything, just be just that quirky character.
Very effortless. I love Semi-Pro. Semi-Pro.
Oh, Semi-Pro is fantastic. The
great Will Ferrell
movie. The intro scene where like he's doing the starting lineup is one of my favorite Ferrell moments. It is so funny. Oh.
Will Arnett's character on commentary is essentially what I would hope to be if I could not take anything seriously and not worry about getting fired or something on the air. I'm like, oh, great. How do I do what Will Arnett did in this movie?
Did you just call me a jive turkey? That's a fantastic. Tom, I don't want to keep you too much, man. I asked you for an hour, about an hour 10. I appreciate it. Appreciate doing this with you again. Tell the people what you got going on in your life.
Yeah, I forget when this airs, but if you...
It'll drop later this week, probably like tomorrow or Thursday.
Oh, great. So this Friday, August 12th, is Emergence. Impact Wrestling will be live from Chicago, Cicero Stadium. It's on Impact Plus, Fight TV, and YouTube for Impact's Ultimate Insiders. If you're in the Chicago area, go to ImpactWrestling.com for tickets. And we'll be back the next night to tape some TV. That's Second City Slam for Impact Wrestling. So again, everything's at ImpactWrestling.com. And then you can check out my podcast if you're a wrestling fan and a Penn State football fan and you can't get enough of me. Go to Believe.com. That's BLEAV.com and search Pater. It's myself and former Penn State NFL and XFL quarterback Matt McGloin, and we're interviewing a lot of Penn State ex-players, and then we're also going to be previewing, breaking down, recapping all the games throughout the season. So we're having a lot of fun with it, and then every once in a while I'll pop up on ESPN Radio doing some play-by-play, and it's just kind of see where that happens. Well, I'll let everybody know when that's going to go down.
All right, and if you're listening to this show, you've probably already found the Believe Podcast Network because this is also on the Believe Podcast Network. So,
oh, great, yeah. So we know all the same people. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. So, Tom, man, I love doing this with you. Let's do it again relatively soon. Good luck with Impact. Good luck with everything that you're doing. I'll be seeing you on Impact. I'll be watching Emergence, so I'm looking forward
to
that. Yeah, man.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, appreciate you. We'll do this again. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, however you're listening, whether it's on Twitter, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast from. Appreciate it, as always. This has been No Notes.